Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Zion.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. That's the telephone number. Talking Giants football with you, or hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. If you prefer to talk that way, and we're joined by Paul Dottino today. Paulie Dots, how are you?
Good to see you again, John. It's
how was your
here.
First weekend without real football? And don't count the Pro Bowl. I said real football.
I watched every snap.
I didn't watch one.
That's okay.
Couldn't be happier with my decision either.
Odell Beckham playing free safety did not make me very happy.
I'm not getting into that again. They talked about that yesterday. I'm not doing it.
Okay.
We're moving on.
And I'm just letting you know.
And I'm telling you, I did not watch the game. It's not real football. I don't care. It has no effect on the Giants. It has no effect on the NFL at large.
Ask the Bengals how they feel about Tyler Eifert. Just ask them. I'm sure they're not too happy this morning.
Like I said, nothing good can come out of the football.
Okay.
So what's the point? Anyway, yes. What I want to talk about today is yesterday, a former Giant decided to end his career. And the end of his career, coming off a year, which unfortunately he had a season-ending injury early in the year, which is too bad. Before he had that injury, he was actually playing pretty well. And Justin Tuck is no longer a member, an active member at least, of the National Football League. Yeah. He decides to retire, and he's really... You know, the last great defensive lineman that's active from those giant Super Bowl teams, I guess Barry Colfield's another one who's still playing. He was there for the 2000. He was a big part of the those two Super Bowls, or at least one of them before he left. And it's just sad to see a guy like Tuck retire. He's a guy that was really here for much of the time that I was here. Obviously, the last two seasons he wasn't here. And I know I'll remember him real fondly as a good player, but really a better guy and a true gentleman.
You know, the thing about Justin Tuck, and I know folks did get an opportunity to know about his off-the-field stuff because Lord only knows what a charitable guy.
Oh.
I mean, he
the whole Tuck Rush for Literacy thing, unbelievable work.
He did so much for Play 60, Rush for Literacy. I can't even begin to tell you how many hours and how many causes and events that he would hold to help out people in the community. He truly is a champion when it comes to community relations, as far as guys who I've covered in my decades here. But I will say the one thing that's very interesting to me about Justin Tuck, that a lot of people probably, well, I guess you kind of know a little bit. As much as he loved the game, and he was a hell of a player for the Giants for a lot of years, he is a diehard New York Yankees fan. He is a big Knicks fan. He is a Rangers hockey fan.
And he wasn't a hockey fan before he started going to Ranger games, by the way.
No,
he loves it.
No. And he is absolutely bonkers for his teams and his other sports.
He's a sports fan that also happens to be an athlete.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, John, you know this.
That's not common.
It's not. There are a lot of guys who play the game who play because it's work. Some guys play the game because they love the game. But chances are... If you go to most guys in that locker room, you won't find them being rabid fans of teams and other sports.
It's more of a job for them.
Tuck is like a regular sports fanatic.
He is.
Who, by the way, grew up in the southeast part of this country and really had no connection to anything New York.
No.
Until he gets drafted by the Giants out of Notre Dame and becomes as much of a blue-blooded New Yorker loving, and I mean loving his New York teams beyond belief. We used to talk Yankees baseball probably as much as we did Giants football when he was here. He would always pull me aside and talk to me about Teixeira or about Alex or about Derek or about the pitching. There would be times where he would tell the guys in the locker room he wasn't talking today. Then he'd call me over and say, Paul, come over here a second. What do you think of Pettit tonight? And we would spend 5 minutes talking about the Yankees. He was as big a sports fan as I've ever known.
And the funny thing about Tuck, you know, like you said, he's from Alabama. He came to New York, and then he went out to Oakland. But his house and his home is still in New Jersey. That's where he's going to settle, and that's where he's going to probably live out the rest of his days. And, you know, and that's where he calls home. And The good thing about this, at least for the city and for New York, is that we're going to be seeing a whole lot more of Justin Tuck now that he's not out there in Oakland.
I think
playing
we will.
For the Raiders. So I think, you know, obviously he still did his rush for literacy thing back here, but I think we'll see more of that now. He'll have more events. He'll be around more. We'll see him in more Knick games, see him at the Garden more, see him at Yankee Stadium more. And I think we'll see him around this building a whole lot more. He couldn't come here playing for the Oakland Raiders. He just can't do it.
Yeah, and I would suspect that all the charitable endeavors that he did and started when he began his NFL career with the Giants, there's no reason why they won't pick up now.
Oh, absolutely not. And he's going to have a ton of support from the organization. You know, the old expression, once a Giant, always a Giant, that's not going to change. So we say bon voyage to Justin Tuck as a member of the NFL player fraternity, but we say welcome back as a New Yorker, as he now is going to be back here full-time, which is certainly a great thing. Let's talk about his career on the field, Paul. And I think one thing that a lot of people haven't thought about or talked about much, in Tuck's last few years, the defense had started a little bit of a decline. They weren't playing as well as they did back in, you know, the 08 years and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people kept saying, oh, the defense doesn't have a leader. You know, oh, Justin Tuck, he mopes around too much. He's not that guy. He needs to be more of a leader, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yet, what happens to the defense the 2 years after Justin Tuck leaves? Does it get better? Do the problems get solved? No, they do not.
No.
And I think it's one of those situations where you don't quite know what you have until you lost it. Because this defense could have used Justin Tuck the last 2 years on that defensive line. It would have made them a better football team.
I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that because of the spectacular nature of O.C. Umanyora's game and because of the Hall of Fame caliber of Michael Strahan's game, that Justin Tuck for quite a while was undervalued on this defensive line. Much like a lot of people undervalued Carl Banks when Harry Carson and Lawrence Taylor were here.
Because they don't get a million sacks. They're two-way players. They're where they have to be. They play their responsibility. They're not flashy about it. They simply go out there and do their job.
That's the way it is. Just the way it is, John. I mean, you know, if you're the third guy of the trio, a lot of people are going to, like, pass you by, and they're not going to recognize you. So I thought it was very important that the timing of Michael's retirement after the 2007 season allowed Tuck to grab more of the forefront of the front four. And so it was now him and O.C. who were now going to be the two guys at the front of the line instead of him being the third guy behind Michael and O.C.
But then JPP shows up.
And then Jason shows up, and Jason makes a big splash.
Right.
And I do think, though, that, you know, there was a short period of time there where Tuck still was able to accumulate some of the spotlight. And I'm glad for that because to be wedged in between the OCs and the JPPs and the Michael Strahans, it would have been easy for him to get lost. I don't think that happened. I do think he got his just due. I thought he was a hell of a player, not a Hall of Famer, but an outstanding player. Much along the lines of, and he didn't have the durability. He wasn't around as long. But, you know, you talk about the great Giants of all time. And, you know, George Martin is a guy that comes to mind for me as one of the all-time great Giants. He's not in the Hall of Fame, but he was an all-time Giants legend. I think Justin Tuck fits in the category with the Jim Catcaviges and with the George Martins and with the Jack Gregories. And those kinds of guys who maybe are not Hall of Famers in the NFL periscope, but they are truly great Giants and pieces of this franchise that will never be forgotten.
Well, let's take a time out here for a second. Go back to 2008, Paul. You're absolutely right. Justin Tuck did have that window. 2008, I don't think anybody would disagree, was the best overall Giants team that we've seen here during the Tom Coughlin era. In terms of regular season performance, when everyone was on the field, they were dominant.
Regular season, yeah.
Well, clearly they weren't at full strength with the whole Burris thing in the postseason, and we get that.
We got to see it.
From games 1 through, I guess it was 12, right? They were the most dominant team in the National Football League. And they beat, during the year, every single team that was in the NFC and AFC championship games.
Mm-hmm.
So if they stayed healthy, they had a chance to be the best team in the league. And why were they so good that year? A dominant running game, best rushing team in the league. But they also had a dominant defense. Well, in 2008, Michael Strahan had retired the previous year. And guess who was hurt the entire year and didn't play? O.C. Umanyora.
His knee
so
was bad.
So who was your best pass rusher and defensive lineman? Justin Tuck.
Made the all-pro team.
12.5 sacks, played the run well, and did everything you would ever want. I mean, look at the other players on this defense, Paul. You still have Antonio Pierce, so he's obviously still one of your leaders there at middle linebacker. Look at the other leading tacklers on this team. James Butler, Michael Johnson, Danny Clark, Chase Blackburn. You have Mathias Kiwanuka, who had 8 sacks that year. He was a big help.
Sure.
Cofield and Robbins up front. Brian Keel. You know, Ronaldo Wynn, Dave Tolfsen, Jay Alford. I'm not exactly listing a bunch of all-pro players here. So, I mean, you can make the argument that Justin Tuck's the best player on that defense, which is really one of the better defenses that we've had here with the Giants.
You know, but
so he was
again,
able to carry the load.
Again, he had that short window, which
correct.
I'm glad for.
Yes.
I'm glad for, mm-hmm. because then JPP makes the big splash a couple of years later, and Justin, you know, has to kind of share that again. The point is he made 2 Pro Bowls, made 1 All-Pro team, and I'm glad he was able to do that. And in addition to that, let's not forget, 2 Super Bowl rings. You know what? I salute this guy. Again, an all-time great Giant, and I'm really happy that he's walking away from the game without any debilitating injuries because he got
correct.
Beaten up.
Oh, yeah.
We know he got beaten up.
Yeah, he was always fighting some type of injury.
But he's walking away relatively healthy as far as I know. And I would add this. I always thought, and I think, John, you probably remember our conversation. When he signed with the Raiders, I remember saying to you, I think with the cap number and the way things are, I'm telling you, I think he's going to wind up having another year here at the end of his career. I thought he was only going to be a Raider for 1 year and that he would probably get trimmed and that he would come back here and sign for a final season and have a victory lap with the Giants. And I thought that the way that the roster was configured, you know, he'd be a run stopper, he'd be a leader, and it would kind of close out that way. I was surprised he got that second season with the Raiders. Then, of course, he got hurt. As it turned out, now he's done, although he told Mike Garofolo from Fox that had Tom Coughlin stayed, he would have considered coming back here for another year with the Giants.
I didn't see that, really.
Which doesn't surprise me because I expected that all along, and it's not going to happen now. But that's okay.
Favorite Justin Tuck memory on or off the field? You already gave me your off the field with the conversations.
Yeah, because he was the biggest sports fan that I've ever met amongst athletes.
How about on the field? To me, it's the 2007 Super Bowl. That takes precedence over the 2011 one for me. I felt like he honestly, and I made this argument after that game in 2007, I thought he should have been the MVP of the game.
Well, you know what? In 86. You could have made the argument that Carl Banks, Phil was phenomenal.
I mean,
Carl Banks was the defensive MVP in 86.
Right, but it's hard to argue against the single best quarterback
in Super Bowl
history.
Before anyone goes nuts on the web on the web streams. No. Absolutely. But the defensive MVP, the 86 Super Bowl, the 87 Super Bowl, of course, the 86 season, was Carl Banks.
Yeah, but I can make the argument that the overall MVP in 2007 could have been 2007 could have been Justin Tuck.
Yeah, you could.
It could have been.
I think
the way that defense was more dominant than the offense in that game.
Let me give you a play.
The pass rush was the difference, and Justin Tuck was the huge part of that pass rush.
There's a play late second quarter, his sack on Brady.
Oh, yeah, it was going into halftime. The Patriots were trying to drive down and score, and Tuck had a sack and a forced fumble.
And they wound up
absolutely not
going for a Gostkowski or Vinatieri. At the time.
Correct.
They wound up not going for a Vinatieri field goal because the Giants defense had stiffened after the Patriots got at the field goal range, and then the Giants came up with a couple of defensive plays. Strahan also had one during that series that prevented them from adding points to the board. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that series, despite Burris's touchdown, despite Tyree's catch, I get all of that stuff. That series, that was New York Giants football.
And it looked like it unsettled Brady for the rest of that game.
Oh, there is no doubt it unsettled Brady. Absolutely no doubt. Without question. Do we have the play-by-play from that particular series? Do you have it?
No, I'm not looking. I mean, I can bring the play-by-play up.
You look what you're looking at. I'll see if I can call the play-by-play up.
I can go to the play-by-play in a second. Eli Manning in that game was 19 of 34, 255 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. It's a good game. It's not an off-the-charts game. For a quarterback, it's good, but it's not off the charts.
Absolutely.
Justin Tuck on defense in that game had 2 sacks, He had a forced fumble. He did force the fumble on that sack, if I recall, right at the end of the second quarter?
I believe that was, yes.
He didn't recover it, but he did force it.
Correct.
To me, if I was deciding the MVP at the end of that game, and I know Eli had the drive at the end, and I'm not trying to discount that. I'm not. But to me, the story of that game was the defense. What made that Patriots team in 2007 so good, Paul, was the fact that they had perhaps the best offense of all time. I mean, they were scoring 40, 50, 60 points a game. They were going absolutely ballistic. I got the play-by-play right here for you. And the Giants' defense slowed it down. A big part of that was Justin Tuck. All right, the Patriots got the ball back with 1:47 to go in the second quarter on their own 11-yard line. So the Giants get them into 3rd-and-13, and Dante Stallworth catches an 18-yard pass to give them first down at their own 26. They get another first down to Wes Welker catch. They got a 3rd-and-4. They get a first down to Kevin Faulk. Then they have 1st-and-10 on their own 38-yard line nearing midfield. They get Randy Moss for 18 yards. They're into Giants territory on the Giants' 44-yard line. 1st-and-10 at the 44 with 22 seconds left. So you still can't kick the field goal. You're 60 yards
away.
But
they're getting in range.
But they're getting in range.
They're in range to get points.
So at 1st-and-10 on the Giants' 44, Justin Tuck has a sack for minus 7 yards. Brady fumbles the football. OC recovers it. And then the Giants try to do a little bit to get in the field goal range. They can't do it, and the half ends. But the Patriots easily could have gotten into field goal range there and given themselves another 3 points, and then the end of the game is a whole lot different.
Totally different. Totally different. And so, you know, I love when Tom Coughlin refers to OC, and he hadn't done it to Tuck, obviously, because Tuck just retired. But when OC retired, remember Tom talking about there's a photo that he has seen or that he had in his office of Brady falling in the pocket. He's been crunched. And who's standing there around him? OC, Michael, and Justin Tuck. Yeah. I don't know if that's the photo. I don't know if there's a photo of that that's somewhere. But
it is that play, I think, though.
Is it that play?
I think it is that play, yes.
Tom would constantly refer to us when people would talk about OC and talk about that photo. If it exists somewhere, I'd love to see it because, yeah, that was Giants defense. That's what Big Blue was about, and that's where Tom Brady knew, uh-oh, I got a problem. Good stuff.
You know, I had forgotten. I wonder why Belichick did that. That's interesting. I had forgotten in that game. I need to watch that game from start to finish again. We will. This is going to be 10-year
anniversary.
Oh, I've
watched it about 20 times.
Years, well, I know you have. I had forgotten that the Patriots went for it on a 4th-and-13 at the Giants' 31. Why did they kick the field goal then?
To this day, I will never fully grasp that. But
why wouldn't you? 4th-and-13. Vinatieri's a good kicker. Kick the damn field goal.
They had opportunities. They had opportunities to do more, and the Giants were able to turn them away.
I had forgotten about that. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Anyway, all right, 201.
That's my play.
939-4513. I'm with you. That's my play, too. And you know, I just thought Tuck could have been the MVP that year. And then again, he's just such a gentleman. There was nobody that was more approachable. You would talk to him about anything in the hallway. You wouldn't have found a nicer guy in the team. And it just it's sad, and it really makes me feel old, quite honestly, to see him retire because he really is in my generation. I think he's actually younger than me.
And I don't want to slight somebody else on that defense because he was the other guy who had basically the best game was James Butler. James Butler was phenomenal in that game, and I've talked to Spags about it many times over.
Perfect.
He got 100.
Tape.
He got 100.
Perfect.
I mean, he got 100.
Absolutely.
First time and only time to that point that Spags had ever given out 100 for a player at safety. And James Butler was phenomenal in that game. Phenomenal. So, yeah, maybe him and Tuck could have been co-MVPs had they gone another way.
Okay. Tuck is younger than me, which makes me feel even older. 201-939-4513 is 32. So he probably still could have squeezed a couple more years out if he wanted to. But, again, he has so much stuff going on off the field. And it's funny, Bob Papa talked to him a couple weeks ago, just about, you know, about Tom Coughlin, you know, calling it quits. And he kind of got his take on Tom. And he basically said he wasn't sure what he was going to do post-career anymore because I believe Justin had done a guest appearance on NFL AM, the pre-game show on NFL Network, the one with Sean O'Hara and Melissa Stark and those folks. I think Game Day First, thank you. I believe he had done a spot on that during one of the playoff rounds, and he was on for like half a show or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he did a good job, and he was still kind of deciding what was next for him. And I think broadcasting, maybe not a full-time thing for him, but I could definitely see him dabbling, and of course, If he wants to do stuff with us, broadcasting-wise, I'm sure Don Sperling could be convinced to make that happen. 201-939-4513. I'm sure he can shoot for bigger and better if he chose as well. All right, let's get to the phones. Fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Bob and Brick will lead us off. What's going on, Bobby?
Hey, hello, guys. It's good to get a chance to talk to you again.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
Well.
I just had some thoughts about, it's pretty timely when we're talking about Justin Tuck, just where two guys with the overall football IQ that I think would be interesting to talk to them about. One is to occasionally have a chance to get on your show, and that would be Chase Blackburn and Justin Tuck. But also, I like the idea of maybe talking to guys like that about if they'd be interested in some kind of assistant coaching with the team. And another guy who comes to my mind that also would be very timely would be the one and only Peyton Manning to get involved in somehow with his competitiveness with his younger brother to be involved somehow maybe next year with pushing the Manning lineage, you know, across the line for another Super Bowl.
See, Bob, here's the trick. And I know a lot of people always talk about these former players becoming assistant coaches. Here's the thing about being an assistant coach. Quite frankly, and God bless all the guys upstairs for doing it, it's a crappy job.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
yes,
you got to work.
Most of them don't need the money because they're not going to make that kind of
money. Well, exactly. No, you aren't going to make close to that much money being an assistant coach. I mean, so some assistant coaches in this league, you know, I don't know what they make here. I honestly have no idea. But, you know, you aren't getting rich being assistant coach. You're working 6 or 7 days a week half the year. The other half of the year you're working, you know, 9 to 5, if not a lot worse than that, depending if you're on draft time or OTAs and minicamp. And you don't get paid a lot. And you basically have to shun your family life. So after these NFL players just went through a 10-year career getting the you-know-what beat out of them, you think they want to go take a job like that? That's, frankly, very thankless when you're an assistant coach? No, thank you. I'll pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, very few of them would. I could understand that. I think if you just, you know, have a difficult time detaching yourself from the game, that might be the where they would look into it. But
I could see Peyton Manning, Bob, doing something with ownership, the same way I could see Derek Jeter doing something with ownership.
That along the line, at some point too, and he's got the cash to do it too.
No, well, yeah, that's absolutely true. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Take
Appreciate
care,
the call. You know, you mentioned the photo, Paul, and that's what I was going to bring up before, and then it
that's not
slid
it
out
it?
Of my mind.
No,
no
that's
that
not,
not
it.
Because you don't see Brett. You still looking for the photo?
I'm
you
still
can't
looking for
show
it.
Show it. What's the difference?
I want to see it.
I want to see it. The other thing that's always very cool, and I think it was at the beginning.
I can't find
it.
It must be
it was 42 or 46. There's an NFL Films on the America's Game thing where at the beginning of the game, Brady kind of looks out there to the side and sees OC and sees Tuck and kind of gives him like a nod of acknowledgement.
Oh, really?
On like the first Patriots series, and it's like, all right, here we go. I don't remember if it was 42 or 46. I should remember that, but
there's
I don't.
The forced fumble.
And by the way, there you go, stripping him from behind. That's actually the OC move, and Tuck got him using the OC move. And I guess Tuck must have been a defensive tackle on that play, running on that three technique. So, I mean, there was just a lot of respect there from anybody that played against Justin and knew him as a guy and a football player. Let's go to Jeff in New Hampshire on line two, Dave. He's up next. What's going on, Jeff?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, Jeff. How are you, pal?
Good. I just want to talk about Justin Tuck for a minute, obviously.
Sure.
But that head nod scene you were just talking about, that was from the Super Bowl 42 season.
That was 42, okay.
That was actually in the regular season finale when the Patriots were trying to finish 16-0. When we actually didn't beat him, Brady gave OC. It was OC. It wasn't Tuck.
It was OC. Okay,
but,
that was close.
And that was the regular season game. That wasn't the Super Bowl game.
Got it.
That was the Week 17 game there. But those America's Game series, I'm glad you mentioned those. I don't know if you guys watch them very much. That's an amazing series. I watch them even on the other teams.
Oh, they're
but
great.
The Giants, the four episodes of the Giants. I've seen them a dozen times each. They're absolutely amazing. And one of the best things about the Super Bowl 46 one, Justin Tuck is one of the players that they feature in that episode.
Yeah.
And it shows an awful lot about the leadership role he took on in that second Super Bowl. And I think that was one of the most important things, you know, for the first Super Bowl. We had the veteran leader in Strahan. We We have a Pro Bowl player in Yuman Yora. 07 was one of his Pro Bowl seasons. He was our only Pro Bowler in 07. Tuck was kind of like the younger guy, the quieter guy. He was really unknown, let's be honest. He wasn't that well-known until that playoff push. Super Bowl was really like his coming-out party.
Yeah.
And then for the second Super Bowl season, you know, our defense was struggling that season. Our defense wasn't that great that season, and they kind of document in that episode, Tuck was hurt for a lot of the season. When he was playing, he wasn't playing well.
That was the bad shoulder year, right?
He
was banged up.
Yeah.
He also invented the all-in mantra that the Giants rode all the way to the championship, too. That was him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when he got healthy and started playing well, and they show a lot of the clips of him doing a lot of the stuff Strahan used to do or the stuff Antonio Pierce used to do, a lot of the motivation and the leadership role. Because at this point, you know, JPP's only in his second year in the league. He's pretty young.
Sure.
And Yuman Yora, he was a great player, but he wasn't the captain of the team. He wasn't the leadership-type player necessarily. Tuck really rose to that occasion. And I think one of the things I appreciated about Tuck the most was the 2008 season. You guys hit on it a little bit. You know, coming off of 2007, I live in New England, so I have to listen to these Patriot fans talking about how 2007 was a fluke and all this stuff. Nothing I wanted more than to see 2008 be a great season and prove it was nothing. It was not a fluke. And it wasn't looking good that summer. Strahan retired, and then Yuman Yora gets hurt. So now we're down to just Tuck. And, you know, look at this team recently, the current Giants team. When we have just JPP and he's facing double teams, nobody on the other side helping him, his numbers go down.
You're right.
Tuck was our only guy in 2008, and he had the best season of his career. I mean, that was unbelievable. And he proved that playoff run was certainly no fluke. That was his first Pro Bowl season, All-Pro season.
Yeah.
And like you guys read off the names on that defense, it was not a star-studded defense, but it was probably more consistent throughout the whole season than our 2007 defense. So, I mean, you really can't say enough about how well Justin Tuck played that season. And I think you hit it right on the head when you said earlier he's one of the all-time. He should end up in the Ring of Honor for the Giants.
I agree with that.
He gets the ceremony the way Yuman Yora did. You know, I put him up there, like you said, with George Martin. I think of guys like Keith Hamilton and Jesse Armstead from my earlier years, players like that. I absolutely put him up there with those guys. Absolutely loved everything he did for this team. And just, you know, obviously he's not on the air, but we should all thank him for those two great Super Bowl runs and everything else he did for the team. So that's pretty much all I had.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the call.
Great call.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really say much more than that. To those Patriot fans that call that game a fluke, I would say, you know what? It might be a fluke. You know what? But the Giants still won it when it counted, and that's really all that matters, isn't it?
And they proved it again a few years later.
Yes, they did. 201-939-4513. That's the beautiful thing about the Super Bowl, folks. You don't have to win a best-of-seven series. All you got to do is win one game, and that's why the NFL is special.
Yeah, but in the Giants and Patriots case, it's 2 out of 2.
You make a good point. But the Patriots did win those two regular season games, Paul, and that almost evened things out, doesn't it?
Yeah. Tommy Boy can put those on his mantle, can't he?
Let's go to Christian in New York. He's up next. Christian, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. Well, before I get talking about the secondary, Justin Tuck was just awesome. I also think he has potential to coach if he wants to. But looking at, you know, one of the free agents in Prince Amukamara, I mean, he's really good, but I feel like he's going to get a bigger paycheck than what he's actually going to put on the field between injuries. And I mean, he really does shut down the decent receivers and the good receivers, but I've just seen him get picked on time and time again with the higher skill level guys.
You know, here's the thing, Christian. I think Prince is an interesting case study this offseason. The NFL, for the most part, is going to be flush with cap space because the cap continues to go up. A lot of teams are going to have money. Prince Umukamara is the type of guy that tends to get paid in free agency in that he's still just in his mid-20s. He's only been in the league for 5 years. He's still young. You can make the argument his best years are still ahead of him. So those are the types of guys that tend to get the biggest types of deals
in
free agency. But you also mentioned some good red flags. The injuries over the course of his career. He's only played 16 games, I believe, once.
Correct.
He's been in and out of the lineup a lot, and it's always been different injuries. It hasn't been one chronic thing. So who knows what's going to come next. When everything's going right for him, he does play very well. But this year when he came back from that bicep injury, he didn't play that well. Maybe it was the injury holding him back. Who knows? So I think there are some things you have to worry about with Prince Christian, but to me, bottom line here, Paul, is price tag. How much is it going to cost, and will the production match the amount of assets you have to put forward to keep him on the roster.
See, for me, it's not about production. It's about just the durability.
Well, of course.
Because I think the production is there.
But remember, though, when he came back from the injury and he was on the field second half of the year, he didn't play that well.
I had him unofficially allowing 3 touchdown catches this year, which I would take. I'm fine with that. I think if you go as an NFL starting corner, if you only allow 3 touchdown catches on the season, I think you've done a good job.
Yeah, but you can't go
DRC
by
touchdown. Only allowed 1.
You can't go by
which
touchdown passes, though, Paul.
It's part of it.
It's part of it.
It's a big
sure,
part
but
of it.
You got to look at number of catches, and if nobody's covering the tight end over the middle, why would you throw it to the wide receiver outside?
Well, that is true. That is true. But there are some corners in this league who've given up 6, 7, 8 touchdown catches for the season.
And that's fair.
And that's not good.
No, that's not good at all.
I'm not paying them anything.
That's fair.
Okay. I think Prince is a good tackler. I think he's above average in run support, and I think he had a good season in terms of keeping people out of the end zone. If you told me I was going to get that over 16 games, I'd be much more willing to open up my wallet. The problem is I'm not going to get that over 16 games.
At least you don't think you are.
He's proven that he can't give it to me over 16 games. Only 1 full season, John. Yeah. I can't pay you for the value that you can provide for me if you're not going to be available for 16 games. I can't do it.
And another thing, guys, can we get DRC on the jugs machine?
He had a couple drops late in the year that really killed him. You're not wrong about that, Christian. The funny thing is, in practice, you never see him drop anything. He catches all those picks in practice.
You're right.
And quite frankly, those 2 drops were very out of character for him, in my opinion.
I agree.
But they happened. You're right. And obviously, I'm sure he's not happy about it, so they're going to have to figure that out.
I mean, he's such a turnover artist that we're just being picky at this point. But you just can't help but wonder what could have been in those 2 games.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely. And by the way, Christian, if you want to check it out, we just put up today the Inside the Film Room. Carl Banks breaks down Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie's tape, talks about his instinctual ability. The play he breaks down that I helped pick out was the play against Dallas, not the pick 6, the other one, where he baited the wide receiver, Terrence Williams, into that deep end cut, and he went underneath the pass and read the hole. Basically ran the route for the wide receiver. But he also said, Carl Banks, this is Carl Banks' words, not mine, that Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie should head to the fish market and try to catch fish. And that'll help him catch the
football.
You know,
I watched that. That was pretty funny.
All right, Christian, appreciate it, bud.
Okay.
Well, have you ever tried to catch a fish?
No.
Come on, Mr. Italian. You've been to, like, the fish market?
Never tried to catch a fish.
Yeah, so you take them out of the thing, and the fish are still kind of moving around.
Okay.
And you throw the fish, and you're the guy has to catch him, and you put it into, like, the crate or whatever it is.
Okay.
And the fish are very squirmy. They're slick. They're very oily.
Slimy is the word you're looking for.
They are slimy.
Fish indeed they are.
Are slimy.
Yes, they are.
So you have to catch the fish. And the fish, it's like Rocky
like
trying.
Like a wet football.
Or like Rocky trying to catch the chicken. It's the same concept. What?
Rocky trying to catch the chicken.
Remember Rocky trying to catch the chicken?
Why
isn't that? It's not that funny.
Yes, it was. It was funny.
I'm going to send you around trying to catch a chicken. You know, I have to catch like a grizzly bear or something like that.
People have enough trouble trying to catch me.
I'm not sure if the grizzly bear would want to go near you, to be quite honest with you. Scare him off. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. It's as simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Christopher is in New Jersey. He wants to talk about Justin Tuck as well. Chris, what's going on, pal?
Hey, all right, John. Hey, John. Hey, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Chris.
What's going on?
All right. You know what? One thing I want to – just 2 quick points. I know the phone lines are busy.
No, take your time,
one
Chris.
One of the things you think about with Justin Tuck is, you know, he was a powerful man. I mean, the big shoulders, big up on top. And you know what? He was a key part of that NASCAR package when you could put him in the defensive tackle position.
Sure.
He was the key to make that whole package work.
Yeah, you know, Chris, you're absolutely right.
Powerful enough to move those guards in the center.
Yeah, Chris, you're absolutely right, and we should have brought that up earlier. His versatility was something that OC didn't have. That Strahan could move in the tackle. He really didn't do it very often.
No.
But earlier in his career, before he dropped all that weight, he had the ability to do that as a good run stopper. But you're right. Justin Tuck, more than any of these other great giant defensive ends, could move to defensive tackle and rush inside and outside. And you're right. It was his ability to do that that really did make that package work.
And in fact, because he was able to do it, then they started doing that with JPP.
Correct.
because right. Justin proved that that was a usable type of defense.
And now we see Robert Ayers do that with the Giants
yes.
now.
And you know what, guys? One of my bad memories of Justin Tuck, and I can't help but think how much better he could have been. But back in 2009, when he sustained that shoulder injury
yeah.
against Flozell Adams and the Cowboys,
yep.
it seemed like after that he was always battling that same shoulder with an on-off injury, back and forth for the remainder of his career with the Giants. It just never seemed
right.
to be the same. Injured, that shoulder always seemed to be an issue.
It's
he always
ironic.
Had those stingers and everything like
he
that.
He had the broken foot early in his career.
Yeah.
And then he got healthy, and things were going real well for him. And then the Flozell Adams thing, to me, he became a chronic injury after that and was always gutting it out and trying to play. He had the neck thing for a while, too, John,
well,
remember?
Well, neck, shoulder, it's kind of all connected.
And it was
there.
Like, you know what? Can we ever see this guy at 100% ever again? But
that's the NFL, though. With
defense, that is the NFL.
You've got to play through injuries.
And it's part of what makes great players truly great. I had this conversation, I think, with Lance a couple weeks ago on the show when I said, when you look at the great players, an often overlooked characteristic of them is their durability and availability. Because I don't care how great a talent you are, if you don't do it over a long period of time, and that means staying on the field year after year after year after year, you're not a great player.
Staying healthy is a skill.
I mean, it's part of it for me.
Look at Tony Gonzalez when he played, always on the field. Look at Jason Witten with Dallas, always on the field. Those guys that are always out there, Eli Manning, never misses a game. Staying healthy is a skill, and it's a skill you pay for, too.
And not just staying healthy, but giving me an adequate level
Correct.
Of production when you're not.
Correct.
That's even better.
It's playing to your skill level even when you're banged up. Absolutely right. Chris, what else you got?
That's it, man. I'll let you run. But thanks. Great show, guys.
Hey, appreciate it.
Good
thanks
stuff.
For coming on, Chris. By the way, folks, we have some open lines. You want to get in and talk about Justin Tuck, his memories. We could talk about the Super Bowl, anything else off-season Giants. I'll go through some tweets, too. And if you guys want to send your tweets in to hashtag Giants chat with your Justin Tuck memories, we can go
There's
through
one
those
here, John,
as well.
I'd like to get to, because he asks about, do you think Justin Tuck will sign a one-day contract to retire as a Giant? He's one of those guys I'd like to see that happen to. It's a ceremonial thing, you know.
Oh, yeah, that'd be
fine. I'd like to see that happen.
Yeah,
I hope it does, just so you know.
He can come back during training camp or OTAs or mini camp or
whatever. Love to see it happen. You know?
Absolutely. I want to, if we didn't mention his bow. That was another Justin Tuck special after he got the sack. He had the bow. He had the shredder face mask. Thank you by Dre Day 2014 for bringing that up. A.J. Marshall asked about the one-day contract. Absolutely. Oh, and here's the photo. Somebody put it up there. Is that the one you're talking about? Brady on his back, ball loose, O.C. walking away and Strahan standing
by. I don't see Michael in there, though.
Tuck. You don't see Tuck.
I mean, not Tuck. Yeah, I don't see Justin.
But that is
a
good photo.
That might be the photo, though, but maybe cropped. I don't know. I wish that I could talk to Coach Coughlin right now and ask him about it. I'd love to talk to Tom and say, you know, could I see that photo? I'd love you to email it to me. Can't do it at the moment. I don't think he's taking my calls.
And then we have some Giant fans upset that the Giants. It's funny. I'm trying to remember back, Paul. We were on the air that offseason. We were taking calls. What was it, 50-50 on fans whether or not they should re-sign Tuck, I'd say, give or take?
I think it was a little better than that.
You think like 60-40
yeah.
today?
Yeah.
Some fans were kind of like, let's move on. I'm done with it type of thing. But
to me,
there were a number that wanted to stay, too.
Yeah. I think that people were more likely to, or at that point, wanted him to stay. But I also think that, you know, the Giants, we knew that they were in a bit of a salary cap crunch, too. And you could not break the bank for him at that point in his career. Because even the Raiders will tell you, he's been there now, well, a year and a half. He was able to stay on the field with them. He was not the same player that the Giants had.
Oh, no, absolutely not. But you never are when you're 30.
No.
When you're 30, you don't play like you're 25. That's just the way it goes, especially in the National Football League. And you know what, though? He had a nice long career. He never deteriorated to the point where he was a liability for his team. He was still a good player to the end.
Yeah, that was never true.
And that's always what you like to see, you know, a guy going out. Maybe not on top, but certainly at a very good level where you're not hanging on too long. And Justin certainly did not do that. Let's go to Andrew in Virginia. He's been holding the longest. Andrew, what's going on?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I haven't checked in with you in a while, but I always look forward to your sort of predictions. And John has always been really great at sort of looking at free agents and identifying a couple on both sides of the ball. I was hoping that we could get an update on your free agency predictions.
Oh, boy.
And as well, just, you know, a few names here and there, because you've been right the last few years, just, you know, anecdotally.
Now, and here's then, the thing, and look, I appreciate the kind words, first of all. And,
yeah,
you know,
that pool's going to change a lot.
Occasionally, a blind squirrel will find an acorn, to quote Mike Francesa. But I don't have my names ready yet that I think the Giants will attack. However, let me give you some names of guys that I like and I would try to go after, and I'll even put a little notations next to these guys. At safety, my first guy I go after would be Eric Berry. I'd throw the same amount of money at him that I tried to throw at Devin McCourty last year. Unfortunately, I do not believe the Chiefs are going to let him go. So I don't think that's going to work out, but that would be my effort. There are some veteran safeties out there. You know, the Eric Weddles, the Reggie Nelsons. At the right price as a stopgap, I would consider guys like that. Rodney McLeod's another name that not a lot of people talk about, but he's a pretty good safety free agent as well. I'm going to stick to the defensive side of the ball because I think that's where most of the Giants' focus is going to be. Cornerbacks, the Giants need a slot corner. And I know Paul doesn't like this guy. Me and him have battled over this guy many times before. I really like him as a slot corner. Paul calls him a munchkin and says he can't cover anybody. I like Brandon Boykin. And I think as a slot corner, he's a good player, and the Giants are in need of a slot corner. And if you can get him at a good price, that would be a guy I would look at. Sean Smith, big physical cornerback from the Chiefs. I think he's a very good player. He's been in the league. I think he's getting close to 30, though, so I'd watch out for his age. A guy in his mid-20s that was a real problem when he came out in the draft in terms of off-the-field stuff, Janoris Jenkins, hasn't really had any issues like that in the NFL. I haven't done my look into his background yet, but he's a mid-20s aged cornerback that I think can still play and play pretty well. Linebacker, I really like both Bronco middle linebackers, inside linebackers, Trevathan and Brandon Marshall. I know they play the 4-3 now, but those guys are their nickel guys,
sure,
which, you know, they can cover really well. I like those two guys. And then on the defensive line, there actually are a decent amount of defensive tackles, I think, that are pretty good run stoppers that are going to be free agents. Some guys are going to require a lot of money, Paul. You know, a guy like Malik Jackson, a guy like Damon Snacks Harrison, those guys are going to require a lot of money. But I think a guy like Brandon Mebane from the Seahawks, who's obviously a little bit older, but an excellent run stopper. Nick Fairley is going to be out there again. Muhammad Wilkerson is going to be too expensive. I'm not even going to go there. But there are, I think, some guys in that defensive tackle spot that you can find to help you stop the run a little bit.
I'm not going to give you names, but I will say this. Of all the Giants' needs and all the holes they have to fill, I would prefer to go after a veteran free agent at the safety spot, and Weddle would be a guy I certainly would look at, and I would look at a veteran right tackle. I think the other areas that the Giants need to fill should be acquired through the draft. Now, the reasons that I will give you are very simple.
You don't mind? You want to try to get a veteran linebacker?
Not going there. I want to go draft with that. My reasons are simple.
You haven't mentioned defensive end yet, you know.
Defensive end, I'm going to tell you something. There's a couple of real good ones in the draft that I'd be looking at, and if I could not get one there, then perhaps I would go with the money. But here's the thing. Unless Mario Williams is going to come down here to the Giants and he's going to come in at a reasonable price.
And he needs to get cut first, by the way.
Right, right. Unless that's a possibility, I don't know that there's any other defensive ends there that I want except to retain JPP and to retain Robert Harris.
What do you think of Olivier Vernon?
Okay.
To me, he's the best 4-3 defensive end out there.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
Can the Dolphins afford to pay big money to Ndamukong Suh and Olivier Vernon?
I got a feeling he's not going to go anywhere.
Okay, you could be right.
And
obviously, Von Miller's not going anywhere. They're going to franchise him.
But my point is this. Yeah. Philosophically, I think you need a veteran safety next to Landon Collins.
I agree.
I don't want him working next to a rookie.
Agree 100%, Paul.
Okay.
I'm with you on that.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm going to put money into the safety spot. That's number one. Especially with Spags' system, where the safety is the second most important guy next to the middle linebacker, may even be the most important guy. Number two, I've already got four young stud offensive linemen, okay, in my opinion, who are going to be starters on this team, because I think Bobby Hart's going to be the starting right guard. With the other three next to him, that leaves the right tackle spot open for me in terms of I need someone to put there.
See, I thought the same thing on Bobby Hart until that last game last year, and I was very discouraged that they decide to start Dallas Reynolds over him.
Understood. I think Bobby Hart's got to do a little bit of growing up.
Okay. And, frankly, I'm not sure why they benched him.
Where does he go?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's a big decision that the Giants have to make this offseason on Will Beatty. I don't think he's a right tackle. That, to me, does not fit his M.O., his body type, his strength as an offensive lineman. It just doesn't match. And David Deal has basically said the same thing to us.
Hence why you sign a veteran right tackle.
Right. And I guess then the Giants have to decide. I mean, theoretically, and I know a lot of people I've talked to around the league think this is a bad idea, that you could, you know, put Flowers back at right tackle for a couple years until Beatty's contract is up. But do you really want to move the guy that you think is going to be your franchise left tackle for 10 years away from the position after he played there for a full year as a rookie?
I wouldn't do it.
Probably not. So, I think that's a great question. I don't know what they're going to do with Will Beatty.
But then what would he do? Be backup to Beatty and Pugh stays at left tackle?
Well, if he's on the roster.
Why wouldn't he be?
I mean, teams can make decisions all the time. I mean, again, I have no
idea
what the Giants
are thinking. You're talking about Will
Beatty? Yeah.
Will Beatty's also coming off of an arm injury.
Correct.
So how do you even know if he can pass the physical? I don't know the answer to that.
Hey, look,
I'm not a doctor.
I have no clue, no idea what the Giants are going to do with Will Beatty, but I do think that's going to be a big decision that will shape what this offseason ends up looking at.
Anyway, those are the two spots I'm spending money on, and the other spots I'm looking to fill in the draft. If, of course, I could get a linebacker or a wide receiver that's going to drop in my lap, that'd be kind of nice, but I'm going to spend my biggest money on those two spots. And then, again, if Mario Williams should come free and he's reasonable, I'd have no problem going after him after his down season in Buffalo because I think he could use a little kick in the pants.
29 or 30?
I think he's 30.
He's 30, right?
I'm fine with that, though.
Last question?
I'm fine.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Andrew.
When do you expect the coaching staff will be final and announced?
That's a great question. I was asking somebody about that this morning. I have no idea. I imagine it's going to be soon. Then again, I said it was going to be soon a week ago, so what the hell do I know?
Should we expect that they might be looking at some assistant coaches from one of these two Super Bowl teams?
I honestly don't know. I'm not sure what the holdup is, Andrew. I wish I could help you out with that. But I would expect, I would say by the end of the month. But speaking of February, so I think that's pretty safe that we'll have our assistants in place in 26 days. What do you think? Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate the call. I wish I could be of more help.
Oh, I think all of us wish we could discuss all of those names. I think the one thing, though, that I would like people to understand, it's not like the Giants are sitting around and they haven't hired guys. They haven't made any announcements. Let's make that very clear, John. They've got guys who they know are on this staff who are doing the work that they need to get done. It's not like they're sitting around here with empty offices and the team is getting caught from behind because they're not doing any work.
I saw you sneaking out of the offensive line coach's office.
Yeah.
No?
Offensive line. That'd really be my forte. I don't think so.
201-939-4513.
I want him to be strong, but I can't coach him.
Charlie is in Portland. What's going on, Chocolatey?
Hey, guys. Hey, P-Dot.
Hello.
Hey, John. How you all doing?
Doing all right, Charlie. Hey, you sound down today. What's up?
Oh, no, I'm not down. I read a quote from Justin Tuck, and he did say if Coughlin was the coach or if the Giants had some interest, he might have played one more year. And I just wish JR and Spags or McAdoo had reached out to him. Because I think he would have played one more year, and we could have used his leadership. And believe me, he would have been better than the last two guys on our defensive line in the rotation. But we didn't reach out to him, and I understand, and I wish him all the best. He was great. I wanted to keep him when he walked. I thought we should have kept him. He would have definitely been a lot better than what we've had the last 2 years. So, I'm glad that he's walking out. He's not hurt. You know, he can live his life and keep doing his charity work, and he'll always be a Giant, that's for sure. So, and the other, you guys were just talking about why, I just don't understand. Why are the Giants like the CIA? Why aren't they announcing their coaches by now? And the thing is, like, I know, P-Dot, you were talking about where you spend your money, but if you're trying to get everybody to fill a lot of holes in the draft, to me, that means we're not going to win for the next 2 years at least. And Eli is getting older. We've already lost 3 years of his football life. We can't lose another 2 years of his football life waiting for rookies to play like
that. Whoa, veterans. Hold on. Did you hear the positions that I targeted, though, and why?
Yeah.
Offensive line is going to keep Eli healthy.
And we I told you.
Strong safety, well, free safety, obviously opposite
I agree
Collins.
With that.
That's desperately needed, and if you don't see that, then you're not watching.
No, I do.
That's desperately needed, and right tackle is going to help keep Eli healthy for the next three seasons.
Yeah, but the thing is, if the Giants would just look at the situation, Flowers is a better right tackle. He didn't play that well at left tackle. Part of it was because of his ankle, I'll grant you that, but he is rating by Pro Football Focus.
Oh, no. Now you hit a soft spot for me. Don't get into that.
Terrible.
Don't get into that. Here, you know what I do with that stuff? That goes right here. Where's my trash can? You people get so caught up in that stuff.
Well, I'm not caught up in it, but the thing is, he did allow a lot of pressure on Eli. He is a better right tackle. He is a mauler. He is not a finesse left tackle. That's why you keep Beatty, if you can, you know, restructure his contract, and if Beatty's healthy, put him back at left tackle, let Flowers play right tackle. Then you won't have to go out and spend money on a right tackle when we already have a right tackle, and we can use that money to get a linebacker or a D-end or a slot corner or another cornerback, because Prince is going to walk.
Listen, here's what you have to remember. This team isn't going to go anywhere if Eli Manning gets hurt. He is still the franchise. He is still the Giants' best hope to make anything happen over the course of the next one, two, or three seasons, or as long as it is that he is still the starting quarterback. Now, anybody who tells you that Eric Flowers, any analytics or stats service that tells you Eric Flowers was the worst left tackle in the game this year, obviously has not watched football, obviously does not know enough about football, and obviously is spending too much time diddling with their numbers instead of understanding the game. So let's make that very clear. Now, if you have watched this game long enough and you understand the game well enough,
I've watched it longer than you.
I've
been a Giants fan a lot longer than you have.
Then you understand that protecting Eli is a premium design of this team going forward. Now, John and I have talked about that offensive line for weeks, months, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The last thing in the world you want to do right now is mess up what's happened between Flowers, Pugh, and Richburg. They've got a threesome right there that's starting to make something happen. They've got a picket fence right there that's starting to really grow into something. You want those guys to grow for the next 4, 5, 6 years, much like those Super Bowl lines did a few years back. You don't want to screw with that. There's value there, my friend. There's a lot of value in that. Why would you want to shake that up?
Because I want the best 5 offensive linemen on the field.
Always, and that's always the number one mantra. I agree with that.
He is a good left tackle.
How do you know he is after what he's been through? Are you his doctor?
He had a pec injury.
No. He had a rotator cuff. The pec was early last year. Then he had a rotator cuff. Coming back in his rehab, he had a rotator cuff.
I'm saying if he is healthy.
Well, if.
How many people on our offensive line has been healthy?
Richburg's healthy. Pugh's healthy. Yeah. Flowers is healthy.
It.
He fought through injury, but he got through it. He played.
Yeah, he did. I agree. We need a right tackle.
Why are you arguing with me?
You guys done yet?
What is the argument?
I just read this entire Tuck Garofalo article by the time you guys were going back and forth.
So I'm going to say one last thing. Why did we always run on the left side? Because Flowers was a better run blocker.
Hold on. Yes, that's true, but that's also because the right side of the line did not run block very well.
Well, whose fault's that? Why do we have Newhouse?
That's why you need a stud right tackle. You got to get Kareem McKenzie back here. That's what you got to do. You need a Kareem. Relax, my man. Relax.
Thank you, Charlie.
You hit a hot button with me. That's all.
Boy, you guys. I literally read that whole article, too.
I know. John.
It's a good article. Did you read it, the Garofalo Tuck one?
I did not read it.
It was very, very good. You should read it.
He hit a hot button with me that set me off into an explosion. But you have to understand, because I am not one who believes strictly in analytics and in stats. And I can't stand people who rank guys based on numbers and don't understand all of the things that went into it. When you look at a guy, when you grade a player, you got to look at scheme. You got to look at opponent. You have to understand what they're trying to do with him. You also have to understand if he's playing hurt or not, because quite frankly, if a guy guts it out, he gets a certain amount of points and credit for me.
Well, look,
you know, when he fights and he claws.
Look, I'm not saying I agree with Charlie, because
Eric Flowers, worst left tackle in the league.
I would have to check myself into an insane asylum.
Please,
but let's say. I'm giving you a let's-see scenario, Paul. Let's say you get to minicamp in June. Will Beattie takes the field. He's healthy. Plays all 3 days. Heading into training camp, you can go 100% practice every day. What do you do? Exactly. 201-939-4513, and I think that's the point Charlie's trying to make.
I don't know if he's a backup. I don't know. Quite frankly, I don't think he gets that far.
Well, maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't. Who knows? But right now, he's a member of the New York Football Giants.
If
I understand, I'm playing.
You know what?
Ifs and buts. Maybe
he's my third tackle.
Len in Columbia, Maryland, will wrap us up today. That's an expensive third tackle. Len, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Good. And just let me say thank you, Justin Tuck, a terrific New York Giant. And, you know, one word comes to mind in those 2007, 2008, and 2009, and, you know, virtually unblockable. I mean, everywhere they put him. Everywhere they put him, the guy seemed to do some damage. And we got two Super Bowls from Justin Tuck, and I don't think we would have won them without him. Probably wouldn't have gotten there without him, to be honest with you.
Think about Tuck.
Thank
quality.
You. Thank you, Justin Tuck.
Quality, not spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
Quality. That's
yeah.
what you say about Justin Tuck.
Yeah.
Reliable.
Yeah. Hey, a couple of things. Paul, I agree with you on the safety situation. We need to get a veteran safety. We just absolutely have to have a veteran safety. I don't think it's going to be Eric Berry. John alluded to this. Neiman Marcus guys usually don't move. Neiman Marcus guys stay with the team that they're with.
Neiman
they either get their
Marcus.
Money or they get franchised. So maybe it's Eric Weddle. I think he's a good player. And, you know, I think at corner and safety, you can play a little longer at those positions than you can at other positions on the defense.
I don't know about corner.
I know he's 31. I know he's 31, but I think we can get 3 years out of Weddle. And he's a good player, and I'd like to see us move in that direction.
You know what I like about Weddle? Boy, he is
his
hungry
beard?
Right now.
No?
He's hungry.
No.
He's really hungry.
I thought you liked his beard.
Yeah. I think he would be a good addition.
He's ticked off that San Diego hasn't won anything in the way they treated him. He's hungry.
I'm trying to make a positive out of Charlie's argument, Paul. I know this kind of rankles you a little bit, but if Beattie's healthy – He's one of our five best linemen.
Yes, he is.
And we got to find a place for him. I mean, you can't just let quality guys go.
You assume two things, Len. A, that he's healthy, and again, I have no idea where his rehab is. I haven't seen him or heard from him. That's one thing. Second thing you're assuming is...
You know, it's really kind of... One thing that's interesting about Beattie, and I thought about it at the time, didn't say anything on the show, but... You know, I got the feeling the Giants wanted him to try to come back and play at the end of the year. I mean, there was so much at stake. There were jobs on the line, you know, and he opted to have the surgery. Now, I'd love to know what's going on in the back rooms, so none of us really do. But it just seemed to me, you know, Will, come back, see if you can help us. It's not just player jobs. That whole the coaching staff, the general manager, jobs were on the line. I mean, you gotta come out and play. It seems like he opted for surgery instead of wanting to come back. I don't know what that means, but that was just a feeling that I got.
Finish up, Len.
You guys alluded to the durability issue. And I wanted to say something, you know, in talking about Tuck. By the way, 11 years, that's a long that's a long time in the modern NFL.
It is.
I think if you went through the Hall of Fame and looked how long Hall of Famers played, you wouldn't find too many of them who played 10 or 11 years. I mean, it's really remarkable for guys today to hang around that, but you know, to hang around that long. I think the word you used was that it's a skill, John. Staying healthy is a skill.
It
Durability is a skill.
Now it is.
Yeah, and here's what I want to say about that. I agree with you. You gotta work at it. You gotta work at being durable, and you can't wait till May to do that. I mean, you can't take too much time off. You gotta be working on your own. Look at Eli. Eli's working all the time. You gotta be in position to stay healthy.
Well, and I'll say this. I think maybe it's not even volume of work, and thanks a lot for the call, number one. We got to go. Appreciate the call. Give us a call back later in the week. I'm not even sure if it's volume of work. I think it's each guy figuring out what that specific body needs, because I think some guys are different. Some guys might need more rest and recovery. Other guys might need more off-season work to stay in the tip-top shape to remain healthy. I mean, if you go back to the – you know, to your days back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, guys have full-time jobs in the off-season. They're, you know, driving trucks, delivering newspapers, doing whatever they do. They're not working out 24/7, and they stayed healthy more than anybody else. So I think it's finding a balance between working too much, getting the rest that you need, and doing whatever that player's particular body requires to remain healthy.
And I understand the bigger players today are bigger, faster, and stronger than they ever were before, but
not always bigger, though.
In a lot of ways, they are.
Not the linebackers.
Well, that's true. But in terms of the relative guys that you played against, it boggles my mind how Walter Payton played as long as he did, how Emmitt Smith played as long as he did, how Jim Brown played as long as he did. Fran Tarkenton, who, outside of a concussion, I think, you know, didn't miss any time in how many years he played.
How about a guy like Hines Ward, who was so small and he played for so long?
There are guys who have defied all the odds of injury over the course of their careers. But Brett Favre played hurt a ton, but he always played.
I'll bring up Jason Witten again.
Jason Witten's another one. I mean, my goodness.
I mean, Howard Cross.
So
Howard Cross played forever.
So, you know, and Strahan was one of those guys until he had the pec.
Right.
And then he had the foot at the end of his career. Amani Toomer. Guy came back from double knee surgery. Two ACLs. And then he went on to have a decade-plus career of durability.
How long did George Martin play?
Harry. You know? Banks. I'm with John on this one. Some of it's luck, but I also think some of it is really understanding the game really, really well and being able to put yourself in position where you're not going to be in a lot of danger a lot of times.
And frankly, playing in control.
Yeah.
I think a lot of guys
– no question.
Play, and again, this is not necessarily a negative either, because you want guys to play hard. But I think some guys sometimes play so hard, they play a little out of control. You know, you see a guy like Vontaze Burfict from the Bengals. The guy tries really hard, but he loses his mind. He drops his head. You look at some of these safeties. They're trying to make football plays. They're trying to help their team win, but they're out of control.
Heck, look at Lawrence Taylor, how durable he was until the Achilles got him at the end.
I want to bring him an example, and this will be the last thing I say before we say goodbye.
Yeah.
And this guy got killed for this. Robinson Cano. All you heard about Yankee fans complaining about Robinson Cano was how he didn't run out ground balls, right? He didn't hustle.
Right.
He never missed a game.
Yeah.
I will trade a guy never missing a game for not sprinting out ground balls in a second. In a second.
Can't help me if you can't play.
No question about it. Everybody, Dottino's back on Thursday with Meadow. I'm with Meadow tomorrow in a little bit of a schedule shuffle this week.
Okay.
And then it's me and Feagles on Friday. I'm going to make an effort here, see if we can get Tuck on the phone, take some calls from fans later.
Oh, my goodness. That would be so great.
I'm going to try. I don't know if I can pull it off, but I'm going to try. I'm going to try to do it with me and Feagles on Friday because he's a former teammate of Jeff.
That'd be very cool.
See if I can pull that off. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. That's Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you tomorrow. Adios.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got through. 35, 30.